This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Texas versus Texas Tech this week. A rivalry that might not be a long for too much longer, but one that has provided myself and many people in the state, many Big 12 fans, with a lot of memories. It is the 41 Acres podcast. It is back. We'll be doing this every week. Subscribe on the Odyssey app. Subscribe to my YouTube channel as well, Landry Locker YouTube. Like, do all that type of stuff. Subscribe would be greatly appreciated. I have a very, very, very fond appreciation for this rivalry. I've been following it since I was a kid. My parents met at UT. We went on road trips to games, me and my father, when my parents divorced. So I was put in the UT onesie as a kid, even though I kind of let them down and didn't end up getting in there. And I ended up going to the school that they will face this week. Texas Tech. And I got the utmost respect for Texas Tech. I got the utmost respect for Coach McGuire. I think Coach McGuire was a great hire. I think he did an excellent job winning over some Tech fans at the press conference, although it was a little bit goofy to many. But he seems like the right guy. He has his team playing very well. Tough loss to NC State. But look, NC State's a good team. And you're taking your team on the road, so no shame there. So we have two and one teams in Texas and Texas Tech. They've both lost to the only ranked teams that they've faced. And heading into this one, it's going to be the first big home game, big home atmosphere for Coach McGuire. I'm assuming it's going to be sold out. I'm assuming it's going to be crazy. I'm assuming it's going to be wild. And I'm assuming it's going to be very tough for Texas to escape there with a win. I'm actually surprised that the spread is up to 6.5. I guess I would bet on Texas, but 6.5 seems like a lot of points. And this is, you know, I think Tech faced probably a tougher test last week, especially with Texas having the backup quarterback at NC State. So I got to give them credit for that. And it's going to be the first taste of Lubbock for Coach Sark and whichever quarterback ends up starting. And that's a very tough place to play, especially when it's rocking. So I anticipate a really good game, really good week, maybe the last time that we see this in a long time. And I know it means a lot to some of you. It means a lot to me. Just my history of the rivalry, my best memories of the Texas versus Texas Tech rivalry. I mean, it really kind of starts in the 90s. I remember in the 90s when Spike Dykes kind of had Texas's number for a while. The Byron Hanspard and Zebby Lethridge days. They beat them in 93. They beat them in 94. I think it was 31-22 in Austin, then 33-9 in Lubbock. Wasn't even really close. And then 1998, I can remember exactly where I was when I watched that game. That was when Texas Tech won 42-35. They actually won 24-10 the year before. But that was when Ricky Williams, the Texas Tech Ricky Williams, was there, and they ended up winning in Lubbock Spike Dykes got the best of the horns again, 42-35. I was with my dad. I remember he was living in Arlington, and we watched that game, and I think afterwards we went to the movies. But I remember that. So those are some of the memories that the Dykes transition into the Leach era. And I also remember 1999, and this isn't like one of the more memorable matchups, but this was when Texas beat Spike Dykes 58-7. And it was Spike Dykes' last game against Texas. And after, you know, the recent beatdowns that he had handed the Longhorns, it was nice to see them get the best of Spike in 1999. And that he kind of passed the baton to Mike Leach. And Mike Leach kind of revolutionized the way that football was played in the Big 12. I mean, I don't want to give him all the credit. I think Art Briles had a lot to do with it. But Mike Leach just changed the way that football was played in Lubbock, and he took him from where Dykes had him in a solid place, and he elevated that significantly. 2002 was where Leach really burst onto the scene. And that, I remember where I was watching this one too. I got like a photographic memory of watching all these games. I was at my boy Kevin's house. We were upstairs. I was being obnoxious, rooting for Texas. And I remember Kevin's parents, who are the sweetest people in the world, salt of the earth. Shout out to Randy and Elizabeth Draper. Great people. I guess they just decided that day they were Tech fans. The whole time that Tech was playing, I was they were taunting me and giving me a hard time. And the game ended. I remember the game ended in a Chris Sims interception. And it was really probably Sims, one of his better performances. He had four touchdowns, but he had the interception at the end of the game. And Texas Tech ended up winning. They actually won the, quote, state championship that year. They beat every team in the state of Texas in that game. Kingsbury had six touchdown passes. Wes Welker, he had 14 catches for 169 yards, a couple touchdowns. My boy, who I would get to know a little bit later on, Nehemiah Glover, had a couple of touchdowns. And Mickey Peters had a touchdown. And Torian, who I got to know a little bit as well, had a touchdown. Just a really exciting Tech team. And that was where you kind of realized with how Kingsbury handled that air raid that Mike Leach was onto something, and he had something figured out. And that was a very exciting game, beating Texas 42-38. 2003, I was at this game. I was actually at this game in the end zone. This was a historic game because I think it was probably the most humbling moment for Vince Young. And really a humbling year for Vince Young in 2003. After the redshirt year, he's on the field. There's some highs, there's some lows, but you're facing a Texas Tech team that you probably think you should beat. I remember B.J. Simmons was the quarterback, and they were all over Texas early on. Our Texas was all over them, actually, up 21-6, 24-14 at the end of the half. But Texas Tech roared back. BJ found his boy Mickey Peters a couple of times. Torian Henderson had three touchdowns. And Tech actually took the lead with 2:03 remaining. And this was where it got really weird because after Vince Young had thrown a couple of interceptions and kind of struggled in the second half, Mac Brown made a decision that, it actually ended up being the right decision. He brought Chance Mock into the game, close to his own end zone. Chance, he completes the long post, and then he ends up finding B.J. Johnson in the end zone, and Texas wins. But after the game, I remember there was discussion about, you know, is Chance Mock your starting quarterback? You're going to go with Texas. They kind of played the quarterback shuffle, and I actually think that Vince Young kind of held on to that because after that, Vince Young played Texas Tech pretty pissed off. And it was very evident going to 2004 when Vince Young had four touchdown runs and 158 yards rushing, and then Cedric Benson had 168 in a TD. Vince was just angry the whole game. And then in 2005, number two versus number 10. It was Texas destined to face USC versus Cody Hodges in Texas Tech. Tech actually took an early lead 7-3, and it was tied in the second, but then Texas scored 28 unanswered, ended up winning 52-17. That was the Vince Young high five game where he was doing like the slow-mo high five. After that 2003 game, Vince Young and the Texas Longhorns actually outscored Texas Tech 103-38. So I think that was actually kind of historic because Vince got pissed off. He got a little bit humbled, and you could tell that he did not want to have another bad game against Texas Tech, and he just completely put it on him. So from that point, you had Texas kind of having control of the rivalry, and that brings us to the GOAT. The best game in the history of this rivalry, maybe the best game in the history of the Big 12. It's definitely up there. And I remember being at this game and ended up, I actually went home because I just didn't like being around a lot of people watching this. This was kind of when I was a little bit more obsessive with things. I ended up getting the shingles after this game, which was bad. Gave my roommate, college roommate, full out chicken pox, which that just kind of shows that maybe I take this a little bit too serious. That's when I kind of had to take a step back, although I don't know how much of a step back I've actually taken. I'm doing a damn podcast about the team. We're going to get guests, by the way, on this podcast throughout. I know the original version when we had Day-Day before, it went away. Not going to get too much into that. We had Vince Young on. We had Brian Robinson on. We had Ramonce Taylor on. We had Chris Del Conte on. We had Eric Metcalf on. We had Brian Jones on. We had Rod Babers on. So we're going to continue to get the guests, and I'm going to continue to give you what you need, talking horns and Big 12. Subscribe on the Odyssey app and subscribe to the YouTube channel. I got you covered. Let's relive, though, the GOAT, the 2008 game. That atmosphere was one of the craziest atmospheres that I've ever seen at a college football game. The whole city was just, I mean, it was lined up. You couldn't get into a bar unless you got there 6 hours early. And there were kids lined up there from Saturday before to the Saturday of the game, just in anticipation of this game, because this was a year where Texas, they were number one, but I don't think too many people expected Texas to be as good as they were that year. And the Big 12 was absolute fire during this. There were four top 10 teams. Texas was one. Oklahoma was in the mix, although they had lost to Texas the 55-45 game. You had Oklahoma State, and then you had Tech at seven. I think OSU was nine. They ended up coming to Lubbock and getting completely beat down by the Red Raiders, and then we know the Red Raiders went on to lose to Oklahoma. But the Big 12 is just absolutely nuts during this game. Texas Tech, actually Texas stopped them on the first series, if you remember, but then Tech punted the ball at the one-yard line. They got the safety, and they jumped out to a 19-0 lead. Ended up being up 22-6 at the half, and the momentum kind of swung, but not really. And the third quarter, and there were a lot of missed calls throughout this game. You had holding calls like crazy on Texas Tech. You had the block in the back on the Jordan Shipley punt return at the start of the third quarter that made it 22-13. You had a phantom pass interference call on Michael Crabtree on first and goal at the 10, where Tech probably would have iced it late in the game. And then you had all kinds of missed calls over the course of this game, but it ended up being a classic. And when you look back at it and you actually watch it, and I actually just rewatched it, it's really insane that happened, because after the Shipley punt return, Daniel Charbonnet picks off Colt McCoy, and Tech goes up 29-13. But then Malcolm Williams, you remember Malcolm Williams? Like, after this game, like, one of my main thoughts was, man, that guy's going to be a stud. He's going to be the next big thing. He's going to be the next receiver. Malcolm Williams caught a 37-yard pass And then he caught a 91-yard pass to make it 29-26. He actually ended the game with four catches for 182 yards. By far the best game of his career. And after that, he just kind of consistently fell off. But Texas Tech kicks the field goal with 5:45 remaining. And then that's where it gets really crazy, because we talk about Blake Gideon and we talk about the dropped interception, but the end of the Texas game, like the offense for Texas, the end of that game, it was coaching malpractice. And it was malpractice by Colt McCoy as well, because Texas got the ball with 5:45 remaining. Texas Tech had one timeout, and Texas just kept snapping the ball with so much time left on the play clock. They snapped it with 19 seconds remaining when there was 4:49 remaining. They snapped it with 11 seconds, then 8. Then at one point, they snapped it with 19 seconds remaining. Then there was an injury timeout when Texas had the ball first and 10 on the 19. They snapped it with 30 seconds remaining. And then Colt McCoy gets a first down, and you hear Brent Musburger and Kirk Herbstreit talking about the clock. Like, what are these guys doing? They snapped it with 16 seconds left. They snapped it with 30 seconds left. They snapped it with 19 seconds left. And then coming out of another injury timeout, Texas on second and goal from the 4, they snapped the ball with 20 seconds left, and Vondrell McGee scores a touchdown with 1:29 remaining. Texas kicks the extra point, but they're kicking to Texas Tech with 1:35 remaining. Just do the math here. Like, just do the math on how ridiculous this is. 19 seconds twice, there's 38. 30 seconds left, there's 1:08. 16 seconds left, there's 1:24. And then you snap it with 20 seconds left, that's 1:44. You left 1:44 of extra time, and you end up kicking off to Texas Tech with 1:35 remaining. Now, I know that there's like a tempo that you want to go by, and early on, I guess I can understand doing that. But when there's an injury timeout and you come out of the injury timeout and you're snapping the ball with 30 seconds left from the 19-yard line, like, we give Blake Gideon a lot of crap. Blake Gideon just hustled and didn't make the play. Like, he didn't make a play that he makes probably 99 times out of 100. Mack Brown and Colt McCoy, they got to talk to each other. Like, there were two injury timeouts. And with one injury timeout, you snap it at 30. And then the next injury timeout, you snap it with another 20 seconds. So 50 seconds in which Mack Brown had time to talk to Colt McCoy, there was no discussion about, hey, guys, Graham Harrell's been cooking us all day. We got a young secondary. Earl Thomas is a freshman. Brown is young. Maybe we should probably kill some time. It never crossed their mind. And they left damn near two minutes on the clock, and Texas Tech got the ball, and the rest is history. They end up scoring with 1 second remaining. Not sure what Earl Thomas and Brown were doing, but you had the dropped interception by Blake Gideon. I don't know what in the heck was going on inside the mind of Mack Brown and Colt McCoy there. Just made no sense. Blake Gideon is the guy that everyone talks about. I saw Apollo Dez said, you know, I can't forgive Gideon. Shoot. You should be talking about Mack Brown and Colt McCoy for snapping the ball with 30 seconds and 29 seconds inside the 20-yard line. Those are the guys who cost you that game. Not that I'm bitter about it or anything, but good Lord. The hell were those guys doing? Seriously, that was disgraceful watching that. I'm gonna give myself shingles again. Since then, though, it's kind of been downhill. Texas has won 11 of 13, 70-35 last year. Pretty big beatdown. And that brings us to right now, where I think for the first time in a while, you can say that both of these programs, they have a lot of momentum. And they're both feeling pretty good about themselves. I think Texas Tech should feel good about themselves with Coach McGuire. As far as Sark goes, the status of Sark, I think it might be too early to say how good of a job Coach Sark is doing. Right now, he's 7-8. He doesn't have his quarterback, and he was able to get the job done against UTSA, but that was just – they just out-athleted UTSA. You handed the ball to Bijan Robinson. Bijan Robinson ran for damn near 200 yards. Your defense got you. I don't think he out-coached Traylor. I actually think Traylor out-coached him. So I get that you were close against Alabama, but I would tap the brakes on praising Sark and, you know, acting like Sark has something going. I like the offense. It seems like he knows what he's doing, but these are the times where you judge a coach. Not when he's full strength, has months to prepare for Alabama, and, you know, gives them a game. You judge a Bob Stoops, not when he wins Big 12 championships with Sam Bradford, or wins national championships with Josh Heupel. You judge him when he has to kick Rhett Bomar off the team and he has to go win a Big 12 title with Paul Thompson. That's when you judge the good coaches. So however long Sark has to tread water, he's already done it against UTSA. Check. You got to do it against Tech now. Check. Tough atmosphere. And then you're going to have to do it against West Virginia. Check. And then you're going to face Oklahoma. So I'm not going to give Sark some sort of moral victory. The recruiting was great. Am I really supposed to credit Sark for that? I mean, I guess it helps. I'm not saying that like players don't want to play for him, but Texas has benefited more from the NIL than anyone. I mean, that's just a fact. Texas and Texas A&M have benefited from that. If there weren't NIL, do you really think that Sark would have been able to get all the talent that he's got at Austin, coming off the season that he had last year? I don't know. We'll see what happens. I mean, there's plenty of time. I would buy stock in Sark, but I'm not going to sit here and say that this guy's proven anything, because he could easily go to Lubbock, lay an egg in West Virginia, and then we'll be having the same discussion that we're having last year. But this is his opportunity to actually prove something and maybe get me on board. Skill position guys. I want to get into the skill position guys, because that is one thing that Sark has going for him. The skill position guys. I tried to think about this the other day, because when I was watching Alabama face Texas, and I went back to the last time these two teams faced off in 2009, I don't think there's any doubt that the skill position players that Texas has right now are better than the ones that they had in 2009. And when I say skill position guys, I'm talking about the wide receivers, running backs, and tight ends. I'm not including the quarterback. But look at the 2009 team. They had Trey Newton, Cody Johnson, and Vondrell McGee at running back. They had Jordan Shipley, who had 116 catches, one of the best receivers in school history. But after that, Dan Buckner was a de facto tight end, and you really didn't have a lot. I would take Bijan and Roshan, along with Worthy, Whittington, Jatavion Sanders, and Casey Kane, and the other guys over that. So I think the skill position talent's good, and I think the skill position talent has potential to be great. I wondered like what I would compare it to in my lifetime and who I would give them the nod over, because I said it's top five in my lifetime, and it's easy to say that off the top of my head, but I just decided to like go back in time and look at some of the other skill position talent and how they stack up. So I went to 1996 when you had the best backfield in the history of University of Texas football, arguably one of. I would put 05 up there with it, because Priest Holmes wasn't quite Priest Holmes, but you had Sean Mitchell get 117 carries, then you had Ricky Williams, and you had Priest. But you had Mike Adams and a young Wayne McGarrity at wide receiver. So maybe that stacks up with this one, although the way that Bijan and Roshan are running right now, man, it's hard to say, although you are talking about Priest and Ricky Williams. 1998, you had Heisman Ricky, and then you had Kwame Cavill and Wayne McGarrity and my boy Ryan Nunez. I love me some Ryan Nunez. I would give, I I would give the edge to this one, this team. I think this team has more explosion when you talk about that. Although Heisman Ricky trumps all, he's one of the GOATs. But Kwame was good and Wayne were good. But I would give the edge to this one. I'll call 96 a push. 2002, you had Cedric Benson, Selvin Young at running back. And then you had Roy Williams, B.J. Johnson, Sloan Thomas, Tony Jeffrey, Kyle Shanahan, Robert Timmons. Man, I thought he was going to be good. That was a one and done. And then you had a young Dave Thomas and Bo Scaife. I would give them the edge over this just because of the receiving core and how good Roy, B.J., and Sloan were. So I would give them the edge. 2005, you had there could be a legit discussion about the better backfield between 96 and 2005, because in 2005, you had Selvin Young, Jamal Charles, Ramontz Taylor, Henry Melton, and Chris Obanaya. That's three NFL players that played the running back position in the NFL. One NFL player that ended up playing D-line, and then another guy that would have been in the NFL had he not screwed up so much in Ramontz Taylor. But the wide receivers left a little bit to be desired. Billy Pittman, Lyman Swede, Carter, and then a young Quan Cosby. Only 15 catches that year, and Dave Thomas. I can't go against that backfield. So I would give 05 the edge, although the receiving core here with Worthy, Whittington, Sanders, Kane is better. The running back field, although Bijan and Roshan are nice too, I'll give it to 05 just because it's 05. And you probably could have used JC even more than you did. 2007, 2008, you had Limus, Shipley, Cosby, who had 92 catches. Shipley had 89. And you had Jamal Charles and Jermichael Finley. I would still give the edge to this one. So those are the only other skill position groups like in the conversation. I would say this skill position group right now, despite being this young, they're definitely top five. They're definitely top five of my lifetime. And they're far, far, far from being an unfinished product. And we'll see how that goes. One thing I do want to see, though, from Sark is more Wildcat. I thought the Wildcat play should have been the play on third and three against Alabama. Let Roshan read it. He either takes it or he hands it to Bijan. It was working in the game. In that situation, instead of putting the ball in Card's hands, put it in maybe two of your best offensive players' hands, definitely on Bijan, probably on Roshan because he's so damn underrated. I would have ran the Wildcat there, and I think we're going to see a lot more Wildcat as this goes on. I think we're going to see a lot of it in Lubbock, and eventually, I'm telling you this right now, Roshan's going to throw the ball. He is going to throw the ball. There's zero doubt about that, but I want to see some more of that, and I want to see these skill position guys continue to grow in Lubbock. I'm going to try out some new equipment on the 41 acres. I'm going to try to call my dad and get his prediction on this game. Just see what he's got to say. I don't know if it's going to work. I got the Rodecaster Pro over here. We're going to record every Wednesday, get some guests. This is some new equipment, new type of stuff. We're getting back in the mix. Subscribe to the channel. But I'm just going to try to call my pops. I don't think this is the best radio/podcast, but I'm going to see if I can do this. Oh, here we go. There we go. Pops.
Hello.
What up, man?
Not much, man.
You're live. I'm talking about Sark and the game. Do you think that they're going to win this game this week?
Can I interest you in a stat?
Oh, okay. Using my own line on me. I like that. Go ahead.
Tech 9-21 at home against Texas. So there's really no home field advantage in being a five.
I think you know better than that, sir.
Well,
I think you've experienced that. I think you know better than that, sir.
Well, I know you got the shingles, and I almost got in a fight with a student And I was, but no, I think they'll cover. I mean, you look at the stats from last year. I mean, it was an ass. Casey had 300 yards. Bijan had 135. Worthy had 100. I think every skilled player in the world scored. I just don't know where the improvement is other than a new coach.
And an atmosphere. But, I think that's going to be a crazy-ass atmosphere. This is the last shot that they got against Texas, and I think that place is going to be crazy, like crazy.
Yeah, but you convinced me last week because I was worried about UTSA, and it's a different deal. Yeah, they'll play a good half, and I think it'll be a competitive game, more competitive than last year. But like I say, there's just, I mean, Tech always scares me.
Yeah,
but I mean, more so than A&M used to. But yeah, I think we'll win the game. I mean, Casey friggin' Thompson threw for over 300 yards, dude.
The defense is a little bit better, though. Damn, I haven't seen you this confident in a while about a game. Not even like the opener against Louisiana. You're confident here. I don't know if you're talking yourself into it or if you're really feeling this way.
Well, isn't their number one linebacker out?
Yeah, he's banged up. He's banged up.
Okay, so I mean,
running the ball. I mean, you got Roshan and Bijan averaging 6 yards a carry. It's really not too hard to figure out what to do there.
Yeah, but I mean, at some point in time, and it may not happen this week, but when we play the teams we're supposed to beat, we beat them, and I just think we're getting there. I don't know. I mean, it's all going to be dependent on that, you know, the lines. And I think we're a lot better than we were, and I think Bijan's going to have a good day. And Worthy scored 2 last year, right?
Yeah, he scored a couple. I was in Vegas for that one. I remember that was a beatdown.
But yeah, I mean, there's half
or whatever.
There's no question they're going to be crazy. Like I say, we lived through that other one. You almost didn't.
I was fine. But I was good.
But yeah, I feel pretty good about it. But I don't, you know, I'll be nervous come game time, and you know, because they're starting to matter again.
Yeah,
and
there's no apathy. There's no apathy. Although I think the apathy kind of is just for you. It's 6 days a week, and then on Saturday it just comes back, even when it's at its worst.
That's probably true. But I mean, as far as Sark, I don't know. The jury's still out, but I think I like the way he talks. I mean, he doesn't blow smoke or anything.
This is where I got my podium critic stuff from, for sure. You used to watch the hell out of some press conferences when we were young, when I was young.
Yeah.
I guess you were young, too. And,
but, I mean, who's the other coach? I mean, I don't know that I've heard
McGuire. McGuire, he's good. He's a good coach. Got a lot of connections. I like his work.
Yeah, but no, I'm not.
Damn, you're giving them bulletin board material. I hope they don't listen to this podcast and probably just play this on loop and go out there and win by 30.
Man, they're 9-21 at home. I mean, the overall record is, I mean, it's just not, we're supposed to beat these teams. So, okay. No, am I confident?
You're cocky is no. What you are, and you always tell me not to be. You're cocky as hell right now.
Well, I mean, we came back against UTSA, man.
Yeah, but I was just saying on here, I didn't think Sark like outcoached Traylor. Like they out-athleted him. I didn't look at that and say, wow, Sark really out-athleted him. I mean, I like the scheme and stuff, but I didn't, you know, as far as like the Sark thing, I'm not like a massive believer. I like what I think there's potential. But get through these next 2 weeks, and then we'll talk. I mean, I'm not going to give him credit for having months to prepare for Alabama and having like a close matchup. That's not going to happen.
Oh yeah, no question. And I think they exhibited that last week. I mean, because that's been Texas's downfall for their whole world, is they had that arrogance that there's, you know, they've got the 5 stars, 4 stars, 3 stars, whatever, and they, you know, they have the better athletes, but there's just been something mentally wrong with them, you know, and it comes down to coaching.
Yeah, and I told you at half last week when you were worrying, I said it's not the same. So
that's what I'm saying.
But this is the one. But this is the one. This is the one that I'm worried about. I'm concerned.
But tell me why.
Because it's a tough atmosphere. I think Texas Tech's better than we think. I think the quarterback is actually the right one. They have the right quarterback in. The defense is playing better. I think the coach is going to have them fired up. I think it's going to be rowdy. It's going to be the first time that any of these quarterbacks, no matter who starts, has experienced an atmosphere like Lubbock. It's going to be the first time that Sark has experienced Lubbock. It's going to be a nasty place. And the quarterback is banged up. He's probably going to have to do a little bit more than he did last week against UTSA. I think it's – this is the first time that you're a lot more confident than I am heading into this game. I think it's going to be tough, but I don't know. Who knows? We'll figure it out.
But just tell me how you go. Just tell me, is Texas better than they were last year?
Yes.
Is Texas better than they were last year?
Yes.
How do they cover the 35-point difference?
Completely new coaches. I don't know.
I mean, I don't either. I mean, I don't either, or I'd gamble as much as you do.
Well, I mean, what did they do after that? Well, I would ask you, what did they do after that 35-point difference last year? They lost to Kansas. They lost a lot of games. Like, Texas lost a lot of games after that.
Yeah.
So, who knows?
Anyway. Yeah, I know. But, I mean, it's they'll cover. That's my prediction.
Okay.
They'll cover the 5.5. Well, I think it's 5.5. So
it's up to 6.5.
So it's 6.5, and they say home field's worth 3, so it's really 9.5.
Okay, there we go.
And so, you know, I think Texas should cover every week going out.
Okay,
you know, and they're not going to be favored in all of them. But you did it to me, man. Don't.
Yeah. Hey, it is what
I
it
mean.
Is.
Last week,
like
you said.
So it's not the
you
same.
Said.
It ain't the same.
I know, but you can talk to me next week, and I may be a depressed son of a gun.
All right, man. I'll talk to you later. Love you.
Welcome.
I haven't seen him this confident in a while. That's my pops. Touching base with the man who made me this crazy. Subscribe to the podcast, 41 Acres on the Odyssey app. Subscribe to the channel. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. We'll have the Lone Star rankings on Friday as well. Check those out at Sports Radio 610. 41 Acres is back, finally. I will keep you updated on everything going on with the Longhorns, as well as with Texas, the Houston Texans, and everything going on in the state of Texas. This has been the return of the 41 Acres Texas Tech edition. I'll say Texas wins. I say they win by 3. I'm not as confident as my pops, but we shall see.